A romance rekindled after 20 years apart.
He knew she was divorced. She knew he was divorced.
Drink if I want to drink.
Could you just stop it?
But some old flames burn too bright.
It was very tumultuous. There were frequent fights.
There's a lot of lying, a lot of deceit.
And when Britt and Michelle Hall combine their families, hidden secrets unleash a nightmare.
Their relationship was nearing a breaking point.
All of that came together and created the perfect storm.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder.
What are you doing with this?
Miles southwest of Atlanta, there's a peaceful and pretty town, a place where nothing much happens.
Noonan, Georgia is a quiet town. Our homes date back to the Civil War. It's a beautiful place to live, and everyone's friendly with everyone else.
It's a small community.
A small community that's about to be torn apart. It's early 2006. Michelle Garner is fresh from her second divorce, and already checking dating sites for a new man. That's where she stumbles across a familiar face, John Britston Hall, known to friends and family simply as Britt.
They met on some dating website. Being in the same small town, he knew she was divorced. She knew he was divorced.
Britt's an old flame. They haven't spoken in a while, but share major history.
The two of them met in high school at Noonan High.
He was known for baseball, being very competitive. He was very, very good looking.
His family was a pillar family in this community. Britt was just an all-American boy. Even in high school, Michelle Garner was known for her theatrical flair.
Very loud, very attention-seeking, over-the-top. Kind of personality.
She was the girl next door, but she also was a little bit dramatic.
But their high school romance doesn't last long.
They dated for maybe 6 or 9 months.
And Britt moves on to Jennifer.
The year we got out of school, we ended up being at the same party. We got together and stayed together. I wrote in my diary that I loved him and one day we'd be married.
And that's exactly what happens. Michelle has no hard feelings.
She was at my wedding. I ended up needing an extra person, and she was kind of always around.
Britt and Jennifer are married for 11 years. During that time, Michelle has two husbands of her own. They're all friends.
We would just hang out and go to dinner or have, you know, dinner at their house, and, you know, that was basically it.
And 20 years later, when both Michelle and Britt are once again single, they decide to rekindle their old romance.
They both went off and got married and had kids and got divorced and then found their way back to each other later.
And I know she thought he was a great catch. He had a steady income, he was a hard worker, he was very good looking.
Britt and Michelle quickly discover their spark is more intense than ever.
I think the attraction was, let's try to do this now as adults and compare it to when we were teenagers.
By this time, Britt is an experienced sheet metal mechanic with Delta Airlines, and Michelle is a dental assistant.
All right, who wants pancakes?
They have 3 children each, a total of 6 kids from previous relationships. They bond over the struggles of being single working parents and all the child support, custody, and visitation issues that come with it.
The two of them both had children with their exes. So there was the constant being pulled in different directions. This kid is here, this kid is there.
Not everyone is thrilled with the new family setup. Britt's ex-wife, Jennifer, and the mother of his kids no longer considers Michelle a friend. In fact, quite the opposite.
As soon as I found out he was dating her, I wanted to throw up because she's very controlling, very possessive. just over the top, and you couldn't reason with her.
There you go. Great. Enjoy.
But Jennifer's kids are more accepting.
She was really nice, and I thought that she was really pretty. She treated me like I was her own daughter.
As long as my children come back with a positive experience, then I'm fine with it.
Nine months after rekindling their romance, Britt, 35, and Michelle, 37, walked down the aisle together at Noonan's Sergeant Baptist Church.
All of us were the bridesmaids, and my little brother was like the ring bearer.
This was her third wedding, Britt's second.
It was weird to see my dad get married with us there. Like, that's something you're supposed to do before your kids, so I just thought it was weird.
But it had to be in a church with a big, huge white wedding gown, tux for my son who was 3 or 4. It was very expensive, and at the time, I knew they were having a lot of financial problems. It just seemed over the top.
Indeed, behind this shiny facade, both Britt and Michelle have their struggles. Michelle is known for her emotional outbursts and her need to be the center of attention.
Then call somebody else.
She's just one of those people that has one of those captivating personalities. You know, it's just kind of all or nothing. When she's friendly, she's overly friendly, and when she's angry, she just goes over the edge.
Michelle's outbursts are totally unpredictable and even frightening.
Classical?
She came in one morning and I had some classical music playing, you know, kind of get everybody to chill out. And she said, well, I'm not going to listen to this music today. She picked up her purse and slammed it into the wall so hard that it actually left a dent in the drywall. She was just, you know, very, very angry about it. And it was all over classical music. It just didn't fit.
She was not in control of herself. She was all over the place. If things weren't going her way, she would pitch a fit. She would throw things.
And while Britt is known around town as a solid provider and all-round good guy, he has emotional problems of his own. He takes antidepressants and struggles with alcohol.
Britt suffered from depression. Sometimes it would come out as anger, but usually it was a self-inward, breastfeeding type behavior.
He would drink to the point of passing out.
Relationship expert Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see a bumpy road ahead for two people with such very different personalities.
When you have two people who have this much baggage, there is so much chaos brought into the relationship that instead of being sort of a settling effect, what you end up having is a double amount of chaos and ultimate potential for failure. I always say that people of like kinds come together. And these two both have really dramatic personalities, and I do believe that that's part of what draws them to each other.
Both Britt and Michelle's history seems to reflect an underlying pattern of self-centeredness or self-absorption. On the one hand, you have someone who seems to expect their problems to be everyone else's problems and expect to be sort of the center of attention. On the other hand, you have somebody who seems to sort of indulge themselves at others' expense. So when you add in dysfunctional history and baggage and everything, it makes it a prescription for dysfunctionality within the family.
You're gonna love it.
Even with all this baggage, Michelle and Britt are convinced they can make a better life for themselves. But when dirt from their past gets dredged up, it could bury their hopes for happiness.
One of the ex-husbands reported to the Department of Family and Children's Services that she was on drugs.
It was inevitable that something was going to happen.
High school sweethearts Michelle and Britt Hall rekindle their romance after nearly 20 years apart. And they marry the same year they reconnect.
You're going to love it.
Despite three failed marriages between them and six children from previous relationships, they're optimistic about the future. But this family is a far cry from the Brady Bunch. Britt and Michelle attempt to combine their families into a two-story townhouse.
They all go into this townhouse. Britt had bought it, and he had rooms for our three children. And next thing they know, Michelle has moved in with a dog and three kids and has taken all of my children's things out, put her kids' things in there, and they were absolutely devastated.
Talk at night and stuff and have some fun.
My room got, like, taken from me, and I really didn't have anywhere to sleep when I went over there, and I did not like it at all.
Oh, isn't this amazing?
Look at the deck.
A breezeway. I've never had a breezeway before.
Space is an issue, but it's something Britt and Michelle can fix.
Meanwhile, he and Michelle are building this house. It's a three-story house. It was going to accommodate his new acquired family, Michelle and her three kids, and then our three kids.
This new house, it was going to be the dream house.
Problem is, money's tight. Britt is forced to turn to his father for help with alimony and child support payments.
He wasn't paying child support. I thought, how can he afford his house?
No, I'm good for it. I'm going to pay you back.
Britt's financial problems only get worse when he loses his job as an airline mechanic.
Britt was depressed. He was upset with this new home and not having a job because he had been laid off from Delta.
Guys, settle down.
And at home, things are tense, even though Britt is hired back after just a few months. But he's working the midnight shift and seems more miserable than ever.
You've got to keep it down. I worked all night. Enough, seriously.
He would sleep in the day. It was hard for him to get up because he was so tired.
Share this one, okay?
Okay, enough! Seriously? I worked all night. I don't want to hear another word. Nothing.
The stress in the household is palpable, and it's Britt's three children who bear the brunt.
Did you see what you guys just did?
Britt and Michelle would both lose their cool with the kids a lot. There was a lot of pushing, a lot of shoving, a lot of yelling.
The blending of the families was hard on her. I think she had a hard enough time dealing with her own, let alone somebody else's.
When they got married, she acted like she liked us, but I don't really think she did, because she yelled at us more. She talked to them more and gave them more attention, and she just kind of blew us off.
Come sit over here.
Michelle won't even let Britt spend time alone with his own kids.
Okay? We're a lot of people.
He used to take us to get smoothies a lot, and then she wouldn't let him do that anymore. And whenever he would want to take us to go play ball, he would have to take her daughter with us, and he didn't want to, so she would get really mad.
Privilege.
Michelle doesn't want Jennifer to know how bad things are, so she tries to limit the kids' contact with their mother.
Michelle, I mean, he would grab the kids by their shirt and just push them down and grab their cell phones right out of their pockets. As soon as they walked in the doors, they had no way of calling me, because they would call me crying all the time. I was scared for my kids' sake. Because with his anger, his anxiety, and his level of depression, and you add her history and her background of her anger and her short fuse and her habits, it's not going to end well.
But worse than how Britt and Michelle treat the kids is how they treat each other. They're fighting more and more frequently.
If you don't go shopping.
No, I don't. What are you, crazy?
Yeah, you do.
I know that we don't have money in the bank right now. What are you talking about? I don't buy anything anymore. Yeah, all I buy is food for the...
They fought a lot about money, and whenever I went over there, I would just cry because I didn't really like it.
I think that the financial stress really contributed to the fights that they were having in their marriage. It was very tumultuous.
The stress of their marital problems takes a toll on Britt. And the way he deals with it, by drinking, is only making his depression worse.
He should have stopped, but he couldn't. And he just kept on and kept on, always fighting with depression and not handling it right and drinking a lot and not knowing how to control his anger and his temper.
On Thanksgiving 2006, it all comes to a head.
Britt?
I'm busy. Leave me alone.
I'm coming in. I just want to see what you're doing.
No.
Let go of the door! Let me open the door! You're drinking again. You
Just stop it!
Michelle's oldest daughter heard an altercation between Britt and Michelle.
You could just hear them from, like, slam the door and, like, him yelling at her and then her yelling back.
Stop. No, why?
Enough!
Britt lost his temper and hit her or pushed her down and that she blacked out.
She's okay.
There was a story made up by Michelle about, you know, she'd fallen or hit her head or something, but apparently the kids knew that Britt had done it.
Britt and Michelle's marriage is being pushed to the brink by his drinking and their constant fighting. But now, a new problem threatens to tip it over the edge. The couple's toxic relationships with their ex-spouses, especially Michelle's ex-husband Steve, the father of her youngest daughter. Michelle accuses Steve of stalking her after their divorce and asks for a restraining order. He shows up at a meeting with her lawyer, armed with a pistol.
It would have been comical, except for the circumstances, and I said, why are you wearing the gun? And he said, because of your client. I mean, that's how fanatic this guy was.
Steve retaliates against Michelle by making accusations of his own.
To express his ire towards her, had called her work and reported to the Department of Family and Children's Services that she was on drugs.
Steve wanted to protect his daughter from Michelle and Britt.
Come on in.
The phone calls could cause Michelle to lose her job and custody of her youngest daughter.
I think it was devastating to her. He had an ex-husband who just hated her. It clearly upset her.
Any other questions?
But the social worker finds nothing amiss.
Great.
She took voluntarily a drug test and the results were negative. There was absolutely no truth to that.
He tends to make things up.
By Christmas, Britt's got his own angry ex-spouse to deal with. Jennifer takes him to court and tells a judge that Michelle is a bad influence on her children.
So the judge took Britt's rights away for the two-week Christmas visit because the children were adamant about not wanting to go, and he ordered some counseling for us to go to.
This family is a mess. They're living in cramped quarters. There's alcoholism, depression, a history of divorces, financial problems. They don't really seem to have a lot going for them. And that's part of why there's so much stress and fighting going on. And so the fact that there are all these custody battles and that there's all this continual problems going on and on and on again makes it even worse.
When you get divorced, your decisions are supposed to be made at that point based on what's in the best interest of your kids going forward, because they've already been through a bunch of chaos. And it seems like these kids have been brought into more chaos.
I look at this family as a pot that is literally about to boil over. There is so much heat and so much pressure and so much intensity that I'm just waiting for an explosion.
And an explosion is just what happens at Michelle's office holiday party.
Can you get me some more punch?
When she got there, she was already inebriated. She was very giggly and just, you know, overly aggressive physically with everybody. She brought in her own iPod station and all that and turned on the music as if nobody else was there and just turned it up full blast. And it didn't get any better as the night went on. Eventually, she fell asleep on the couch.
What are you talking about?
Soon afterwards, Michelle's boss orders her to get counseling for her volatile behavior and to take 3 months off without pay. But Michelle refuses to get treatment.
Is that what this is about? Fine, forget it. You want to have my... Here, take my whole thing. You can deal with all this.
She got really angry and said, no, I can't afford to take 3 months off. I have children to support. I said, well, you know, you're really not going to get much of a choice.
Michelle is let go, but she isn't about to share that news with her husband.
Michelle had been fired from her job, but did not want to let Britt know that she'd been fired because it would be a very sore subject. So she started to pretend like she was going to work every day. She continued to put her scrubs on.
Michelle has good reason to fear Britt's temper. But does she have something even worse to hide?
Britt did not know that his best friend had been seeing his wife.
I think all of that came together and created the perfect storm.
Michelle and Britt Hall have been married a year and a half, but they're struggling financially, and Michelle hasn't told her husband she's been fired.
You guys are gonna love it.
But spring brings new hope.
Ta-da!
In April 2008, Britt and Michelle move into their dream house with six bedrooms spread over three spacious floors. On top of that, the divorce court allows Britt once again to see his two youngest children.
A new judge took on the case and threw out everything else that had been previously put into place. So, fresh start.
That means the whole family can be under the same roof, with enough space for all eight members of the blended family.
In a big house with everything, hardwood floor, the countertops, everything perfect. It was three stories. There was three bedrooms upstairs, three bathrooms upstairs, and they had a master bedroom with a huge bathroom.
Oh, they love it.
They should be happy. But the bills are mounting. The house isn't finished yet, and the halls are running out of cash.
There was unfinished bathrooms, and the basement was unfinished, and the yard, there was no grass, it was just dirt, and that there was barely any furniture because I guess they couldn't afford it.
The two of them were living beyond their means, and they just wanted more and couldn't afford it.
And when Britt goes to finalize the mortgage, he gets a nasty shock.
He had just found out that they couldn't close on their big, beautiful house because Michelle didn't pay any of the contractors.
What a great day.
Instead, Michelle has blown through thousands of dollars, spoiling her kids.
I got the best necklace. Like, it was really...
Always with her daughters, it was always the best fashionable clothes, the hair, the highlights, the colors, the over-the-top birthday parties, the over-the-top prom stuff, over-the-top Christmas. I mean, ridiculous, just absolutely ridiculous things.
Hey, look at how cute this is.
But the contractors did not get paid, so they put liens on the home.
Now, Michelle and Britt are living under the threat of foreclosure.
At that point, his whole world was coming down, it's crashing.
What do you mean she was fired?
Not only does Britt learn that his dream home is in jeopardy, he discovers that Michelle was fired and didn't tell him.
Michelle was now gonna have to be accountable and answer for everything that she's done.
Hey. Why are you dressed like that?
Been working.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Where do you go all day?
Okay, relax.
We have no money. Where's the money going? Where have you been going?
Before long, Britt discovers exactly what Michelle has been doing with her free time. As if their financial problems aren't bad enough, Britt is having to deal with a new crisis. She's rumored to be cheating on him with Britt's best man, Eddie Carter.
Eddie was Britt's best friend through high school. They hunted together, they played ball together. Britt had just found out that Eddie had been seeing his wife.
It's all too much for Britt, and then he makes things worse.
Britt was on, I think, three different medications for depression, and he, at one point, stopped filling those.
It's very common for people to go off of their mental health medications. Sometimes with a history of substance abuse, you see people preferring to self-medicate with substances rather than to medicate themselves as directed by their doctors. And it's just another sign, I think, in this case, of Britt's impulsivity.
It's very dangerous for a person to suddenly stop taking antidepressant medication, particularly if they haven't consulted with a doctor. We don't know what kind of withdrawals he might suffer from, we don't know what symptoms he's going to have, and we don't know what the ultimate ramifications will be.
It's getting so bad that even the kids are afraid. Michelle's youngest daughter has been keeping a journal detailing her feelings. Even she can sense Britt's anger may be spiraling out of control.
I had to sit and watch this unfold. I was horrified, terrified for my children. And I couldn't really say anything because I didn't want to rock the boat more than I had to. But I felt like helpless, you know.
They've been in their dream house just 3 months.
God, damn fox again.
And Britt's erratic behavior is getting worrying.
There was a red fox that had come out of the woods. He was concerned apparently about being around the house with the kids there. So he staked out the fox.
But seeing Britt handling a loaded gun in the house makes everyone nervous.
Hey, little fox.
I'm taking the gun. Give me the gun.
Any person with a history of violence, mental health issues, substance abuse issues, combining that person with a loaded firearm in a house is not a good prescription, especially not with children in the house as well.
Britt's target for the gun is a fox running through the yard. But I'm really worried about everyone living in that house. He has impulse control problems, and I worry that one day he may pick up the gun and fire it at somebody, and he might regret that.
Britt fails to gun down the fox, but that doesn't stop the Halls from hosting a barbecue in the yard to celebrate.
Yeah.
Michelle has a new job.
Yeah, I saw them.
It's supposed to be a fun evening. But by 3 p.m., Michelle and Britt are already fighting.
Where the bacon is? You know where the bacon is?
Yes, I look next to the bacon. I know where to look for...
Well, then go again.
I can't find the hot dogs. I'm getting a different brand.
He got the wrong ones. So when he came back, she started screaming, these are the wrong hot dogs. These aren't right.
I think the hot dogs were just the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back.
But if the kids are hoping their parents will make peace, they're soon disappointed.
Really?
They were preparing for this cookout, and at some point, Britt squirted her with ketchup.
On a hot dog?
Yes.
Hold on, just let me get you a little ketchup. What
the? What are you doing?
You want
ketchup? Britt and Michelle's fight escalates.
You squirted me with ketchup!
Yes, I did.
What kind of a man does this?
It was more harsh, like... They were yelling louder.
In front of the kids. No, I am not freaking out the kids.
By early evening, Michelle's oldest daughter and her friend leave for a baseball game. Then Jennifer calls the house.
He was supposed to bring him home at 6. So I called him and says, please keep the kids for a little bit longer. He says, okay, how about you just let him spend the night? And I said, no. Something in my gut just said no, because things haven't been great. So I called him back. I said, everything's good. You can go ahead and bring him home.
When the kids do get dropped at home, 6-year-old Dottie has some disturbing news.
I tell her there's been a lot of fighting at the house over weird things. I feel like I had to tell my mom because I was concerned.
The kids started telling me about all the stuff that was happening that evening and all this arguing and yelling and screaming, but Mom, you don't understand. It was different. They were also upset because their stepsister was there alone without any siblings to protect her.
I wanted her to just leave because they were fighting like that and she shouldn't have been around that.
I am sick of the way you're treating me.
What are you...
Jennifer is so alarmed, she reaches out to one of Michelle's ex-husbands.
It concerned me so much that I felt the need to call Steve, who was Alyssa's father. I said, Steve, I don't want to alarm you, but Aunt Alyssa's there by herself, and I just want to give you a heads up, maybe just call and check on her.
But the fighting is about to escalate to a whole new level. It's about to turn deadly.
He called me back and he said, Jen, I called the house and police answered there's been a shooting.
A domestic argument between Britt and Michelle Hall turns ugly. As night falls, it only gets worse.
He was in a foul, depressed mood, talking about how useless he was, how he couldn't do anything, how he couldn't make her happy, couldn't treat his kids the way he wanted. Britt had gone into this little office den where the rifle was. Michelle got concerned about that, went into that office area, and Britt was sitting behind the desk at the computer.
What's wrong with you?
Michelle thought that Britt was typing out a suicide note because of what he had said when he came home.
Michelle can't see what he's typing.
What is that?
But something else catches her eye.
A gun here!
Give me the gun.
What are you doing with this? No, I'm not going to give you the gun.
Michelle said she felt he was going to harm himself since he kept saying he wished that he was dead.
No!
Britt saw her looking, and she went to get the gun to get it away from the room, away from him.
You're going
to
do with this?
Give me the gun.
What do you think you're going to do with it? Take the dog and go to your room.
They struggled over it. She was not going to let go of the gun.
She's trying to empty the gun by firing it straight across the hallway where the dining room is. So she's pulling the trigger and shooting against the wall.
Go! Go! Oh! She shot me!
And all of a sudden, she realizes that Brett's on the floor and that he's bleeding. And he said, look, you just shot me.
The bullet hits Britt in the leg.
She didn't realize she did it, didn't do it intentionally. She said that she sat down to comfort him and everything, and he was upset with her. She tells Britt that we need to call and get help for your wound where I've shot you. And he just says, I love you. I wanna give you a hug.
But it's a ruse. Britt remains determined to get control of the gun.
What are you doing?
He was yelling to her, let go of the gun, put down the gun.
Oh, no!
Give me the gun.
What are you doing?
Put the gun under her chin and said he was going to take them both out.
She said that he was telling her he wished that she was dead.
But instead of killing her, he turns it on himself. It's 8:02 p.m. when Michelle Hall calls 911. Her husband lies on the floor motionless with a gunshot to his chest.
That night, I was getting ready to leave the office and a call came out.
County 911 operator 91, where's your emergency?
My husband, he shot himself. We were fighting.
Okay, where is he right now?
He's in our bathroom floor.
When the police and paramedics arrive, Britt Hall is dead. The house looks like it's been the scene of a shootout.
There appeared to be gunshot holes in the walls, baseboards, throughout this small hallway and dining room area and kitchen.
Michelle told the law enforcement officer, who's one of the first people on scene, that Britt had shot himself.
Britt Hall is in the hall bathroom. And he was flat on his back, like he had only stepped in maybe 2 feet and fell backwards. There was a wound to the left side of the chest in the heart area.
Britt Hall is dead at the age of 37, a tragic casualty of his failing marriage with Michelle.
This was a relationship that was really never in great shape. And the violence that the two of them shared with one another and the cheating and the substance abuse, these are all building points for what eventually was going to culminate into something really dramatic.
Yeah, the antisocial behaviors in particular, the violent behavior, the substance abuse behavior, that tends to escalate. If antisocial behavior doesn't get arrested somehow, literally or figuratively, it tends to escalate. And it can escalate all the way up until somebody's dead.
It may have been his way of punishing her, as if to say, you've hurt me so much that I'm going to kill myself and I'm going to make you watch.
Britt's death is a devastating blow to his family.
Dottie screamed and yelled and hit things and hit me, and Aunt Louise just buried her head in the sofa. It was hard. We just cried and cried and cried.
Friends and family all gather at the funeral home to mourn this tragic suicide.
The kids did not want to see him dead, either did I, so I had insisted on them closing the casket so that we could go in there and say our goodbyes. It was tough.
His funeral was packed out. There were a lot of people there. It was very overwhelming. He was well-liked in this community. People were there to support his family, along to pay their respects for Britt.
Britt's family is still reeling from his death, but the revelations to come are far more shocking.
The investigators began to think, this doesn't look like he shot himself.
Michelle did not attend the funeral. She was in our jail at that time.
John Brittston Hall, known to friends and family as Britt, is dead at the age of 37. His wife Michelle claims it was suicide, that he shot himself. But the cops are suspicious.
Her story immediately wasn't adding up. He was shot in the leg, in the chest, and in the arm. He was shot 3 times. And no investigator worth their salt would have believed for a moment that someone trying to commit suicide would have shot themselves 3 times.
But it's when they get into the details of Michelle's account that they begin to find even bigger holes in her story.
You're showing with your right hand. You said you were holding the leg with your left hand.
Okay, I lied, I'm sorry.
That's not a lie, if you got confused.
No,
So you had to go. She described him pulling the gun to his chest and shooting himself with his revolver. That description necessarily would have indicated what we call a press contact wound, that the gun was pressed up against the skin and clothing and was then fired. Press contact, when the gas is emitted from the gun, burns and charred the flesh around the wound. That wasn't present. And they immediately began to think, this doesn't look like he shot himself.
Next, the cops examined the gun.
The gun was a 6-round revolver. All the shells were spent. That means 6 shots were fired there. They actually found 8 bullet holes. You had more shots than you had in the gun. She had actually reloaded.
The fact that the gun was reloaded showed the malice of the case. It wasn't an accidental shooting. Someone exited the home in the midst of this argument, reloaded the gun, and came back in and fired additional rounds. And that someone was Michelle.
What is the reason you didn't call 911 after he was shot in the leg?
Michelle can't keep her story straight.
This is the best I know how. Oh, my God.
You need to sit back down.
No, I would have done that.
You pointed that gun at him and shot him in the heart.
Michelle's story's changed from the time we arrived on the scene. Then it changed throughout her interview.
Tell me this.
On his cell phone, he jerked it out of my hand. He broke it in half.
Where is that phone?
What room? Because we didn't find a broken cell phone.
The evidence didn't add up. She was clearly lying.
Michelle Hall is charged with the murder of her husband, and her bond is set at $100,000. She is able to pay for it, though it's not clear how. And while police and prosecutors build their case against her, she finds solace in the arms of Britt's best friend.
Michelle got out of jail and moved in with Eddie and lived with him for the whole year that she was out on bond.
Over the months to come, police and prosecutors learn Britt is not the only one with a history of violence. Michelle's first husband, Rusty, comes forward with a story.
Rusty described that there was a time at a party where Michelle thought that Rusty was involved with somebody else, and she ended up punching him in the nose.
Michelle's second husband, Steve, also says Michelle attacked him.
Another previous spouse described how she began to attack him and kick him and chase him into a vehicle. It was a brief but violent episode, and it showed that Michelle, when squeezed, resorted to violence, particularly in those relationships of a close, intimate relationship.
What are you doing? Why? Where are you taking her?
What really tips the evidence against Michelle is an eyewitness who comes forward to give her version of events. Michelle's own 8-year-old daughter is the only other person present throughout the tragedy.
Now please, tell me what you heard.
Michelle's youngest daughter heard the fight begin to escalate, and she described hearing her mom say angry words and yelling at Britt. And in between those exchanges, she heard gunshots, and she heard multiple gunshots go off.
Then, suddenly, there is silence in the house.
There was a break in the action. There was a break in the gunshots and in the arguing. She heard the door open and heard wind chime.
She had heard the door chimes going off on the home, indicating that someone had left the residence, giving them time to reload the gun and re-enter. And according to the prosecution, that someone was Michelle.
At this point, Britt was sitting in the house with a gunshot wound to his leg. She, at that point, had an opportunity to flee, retreat, call 911, call her neighbors. But when she went outside, rather than utilizing any of those other options, she went and reloaded the gun, and then she came back inside with the gun.
Then she hears her stepfather's voice again.
She heard her daddy saying, "Michelle, put the gun down. Michelle, put the gun down. Michelle, put the gun down."
He was already in a position where he was no threat to her, and she shot him again.
"Put the gun down. Michelle, please. Please, come on. No!"
The shot enters Britt's heart. But incredibly, the athletic 37-year-old is still alive.
When the investigators recorded the crime scene, they saw that there was an 80 to 90 degree blood drop pattern going into the bathroom. What that meant to us was Britt had already been shot in the chest. He was leaning over, crawling to the bathroom, trying to escape her when the third shot came.
We believe that Britt put his arm up, seeing that she was going to shoot him again, and tries to block the bullet and trying to kick the door shut with his feet, and that's when she shot him again.
The third shot came in through the arm, traveled up the arm and was lodged in the shoulder. Then Michelle came upstairs and she had blood on her, and at that point the police were called.
Police and prosecutors believe Michelle made a deliberate choice to take Britt down when she went outside and reloaded the gun.
It wasn't just a heated argument that went awry. She intended to kill him, and she accomplished what she set out to do.
Now, why Michelle on that day chose to do this, I don't know. There was no evidence that she spent months planning a way to kill Britt, and frankly, I don't think that's what happened.
I think that Michelle had just been fighting and fighting and fighting, it sounds like, not just with Britt, but with ex-husbands, and everything just came to a head that day, and I think she just snapped.
Michelle goes on trial for murder in September 2009. The evidence against her is overwhelming, particularly from the prosecution's star witness.
Here's the sweet and innocent girl who's smiling on closed-circuit television. Meanwhile, her mom is sobbing in the courtroom because she realizes at that point that her daughter's testimony is very damning.
It was very powerful. Britt say, "Michelle, put the gun down." Boom. "Michelle, please put the gun down." Boom. And what this child was hearing was him, Britt, pleading for his life.
It was essentially the nail in her mother's coffin.
Michelle didn't just kill her husband, she destroyed an entire family. She left a lot of kids without a father. And I don't really think she has any remorse. Just the fact that she moved right in with his best friend while she was out on bond tells me that she doesn't have any regard for his children whatsoever.
You know, most people who kill another person, even if it's in self-defense, feel bad about it. So somebody who can think it through and carry it out as a way of making their lives easier on them speaks to a level of depravity, a lack of empathy that's hard for the normal human being to relate to.
I truly believe that she thought that she would get away with this murder. She figured that they would believe her story and that she would turn out okay.
A Goleta County Superior Court jury takes less than 3 hours to find Michelle Garner Hall guilty of premeditated murder. She is sentenced to life plus 20 years, meaning she will not be eligible for parole for 30 years.
She's probably going to be in jail for the rest of her productive life. She's going to crawl out, I'm afraid.
Michelle and Britt's ex-spouses have custody of their respective children. Michelle hasn't been allowed to see her youngest daughter. Britt's children won't see their dad again either.
So it's hard. They were little when he was killed, and there was a lot of tension, a lot of anger there.
I think about him every day. I miss my dad a lot.